Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 51 of the Audio Briefings. Thanks for joining me. Really happy to have you here. I've got a really interesting chat today with Vignesh up in Fort McMurray, Alberta, and I'm really excited to share that with you. Vignesh is on the same page as me almost in every way, and he's trying to bring his experience to general aviation to try and make things safer, make things better, to pass on real-world training to general aviation pilots. So before we get into that, I wanted to tell you a little bit about this week. It's been another full week. I just had a week off the quote-unquote day job, but it's been pretty full up. So on Monday, I did a hour-long webinar with the BC Aviation Council kind of youth committee, and we had about 40 people on there. And it was all about the power of networking and some networking strategies, networking tips, and why networking is so important in aviation. And I found out only about 5 minutes before it started that it was going to be recorded and put on YouTube. So if you search BC Aviation Council networking, you'll probably find the whole thing there. She said she edited it, and I told her just edit out the whole part where I'm talking if you want to make a good video. But anyway, that's there if you want to see it. Did a coaching flight, IFR coaching flight in the Piper Malibu this week. Did a helicopter lesson again for the first time in a month, and it had been a full month. And I thought it was going to be really tough getting back behind the cyclic there with Sam. But over the month, I've been keeping my head in the game and trying to study and just visualize things. And it actually was pretty good. And we went and did some advanced confined area landings. The logging pad that we landed on the hillside, like jutting out from the side of this hill in the middle of the trees that we did on my intro flight, where I thought Sam was absolutely nuts and we shouldn't even be there. With a lot of coaching and talking through from Sam, I managed to land that myself this week. So that was pretty exciting, along with some other spots. So I'm looking forward to, in a couple more weeks, maybe doing another one. I'm trying to preserve a little bit of capital here. For some reasons that I'll probably share in a couple episodes. But trying to pick away at that a little bit. What else did we do this week? Did some tailwheel training with Tom earlier in the week. There's a bunch of smoke kind of sitting in the valley, but we went out and tried to make the most of it. It was a challenging one, and he worked hard. I worked him hard, and then the sun was going down. Sun was kind of in our face, and it wasn't optimal for doing pattern work tailwheel, so we ended up climbing up above the haze, and it was clear out towards the city. Had an awesome sunset flight over the city. Tom, it's nice to share that moment with you, as romantic as it was. But anyway, had a good tailwheel flight with Tom. Flight Chops has been doing an IFR flight across a good way across the country, from Calgary all the way to Toronto this week in a Piper Saratoga, and I'm sure he'll be putting out some videos on that trip. And he's flying with his buddy Blake. And interesting thing about this trip is it is being done with a standard six pack. So he's got a VOR, he's got a ADF, and a rudimentary kind of heading hold autopilot, but there's no IFR GPS, which takes some serious planning because we can't just go GPS direct everywhere. So I feel truly honored to be able to chat to Steve pretty much every day this week as we brief weather, and he has involved me in his decision making in terms of should I go, should I not go, these are the winds, these are the conditions, how am I going to plan this route. So it's really fun being able to do stuff like that with Steve, and I'm looking forward to doing a trip across the country the other way in his RV once it's done being built. And you can see more of that on the Flight Chops channel. What else? Did a ground session yesterday with one of our clients, covering off all the modules for his private operator registration document training, much like a commercial operation, you know, stuff like RVSM, airborne ground icing requirements, restricted approaches, all that good stuff. We spent the day yesterday in his workshop going over that stuff, and it's a great refresher for him, and it's a great refresher for me because it forces me to get back in the books and really review the subject matter before I deliver it. All right, so we're going to get into our chat with Vignesh, and this conversation with Vignesh really was inspired by the letter that I read last week from Ryan Mitchell, where he said we should, you know, do a little bit more of a series on people sharing some lessons they've learned, some experiences that they've had where they got them into a position, and the decision-making that led them to that position, and how they got out of it, and what they learned, and what they might do different, and all that good stuff. We read that letter from Ryan. Vignesh emailed me right away as soon as he heard that episode and said he wanted to share one of his experiences. So we're going to get straight to our conversation with Vignesh. Just a friendly reminder, if you want to support what we're doing here with the audio briefings, you can go to the audio briefings website, www.cardinalaviation.ca/podcast. You can hit the support the podcast button and you can become an annual subscriber, or you can buy us a coffee, whichever. We just really appreciate the support, and it allows us to continue doing what we do to bring this to you. And one last thing, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation. All right, here it is, my chat with Vignesh. I'm here with Vignesh this evening, and I'm really excited to do this because we've been working pretty closely together the last couple of months. Vignesh is a member of BC General Aviation Association. I knew him as a flight instructor through the association. We've never actually met in person, funny enough, but we spent a lot of time sharing information, bouncing ideas off one another. And he was a flight instructor, ended up in Alberta. He's going to get into that. And you guys all know the kind of stuff Cardinal Aviation is doing. Vignesh also sees the need for the type of services we're providing with the coaching and the consulting and all that good stuff, and is doing something similar in Alberta. And I guess birds of feather fly together, flock together, I don't know. So we have Cardinal Aviation. Vignesh started Blue Jay Aviation. I'm flattered because he at least called and was like, hey, I want to do something really similar. What do you think? And it's really easy to, and him and I have had this conversation before, to say, oh, somebody wants to compete with me. No, I'm not going to work with these guys. I'm not going to help these guys out. But when our primary motivation is furthering flight safety and providing an excellent service and improving aviation for everybody, it's pretty silly if you don't want to encourage other people to do the same. So we've been working pretty well together, and I'm happy to have Vignesh on here. And yeah, Vignesh, welcome.
Well, thanks, Ryan. I'm very happy to be here as well. And actually, it's an honor. I listen to your show almost as soon as the season comes out, as soon as the episode comes out. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. Yeah, no, thanks for doing this. So I want to learn a little bit more about Vignesh. The reason why we've talked about doing one of these for a while, but we solidified it yesterday because in episode 50 we talked about Ryan Mitchell's suggestion that we should share a little bit more. We should get more people sharing about situations that they've put themselves in, where something may not have gone really according to plan and they might have done something differently, because we all want to learn from one another. And I've shared a lot of my experiences, and you have one that you want to share, which I think is, you just gave me the Coles notes, and I think it's really interesting. But before we get to that, obviously you have an accent. For me being I'm a first generation Canadian. My parents both immigrated to Canada. My mom still has an accent. You have an accent. So I just asked you where you're from, and you said, well, it depends, India. And I said, well, where are you born? You said Dubai. And so now that's interesting. So I want to know about who Vignesh is and how he ended up from, where is it weird to say from his mom? How did you get from your mom to Fort McMurray, Alberta?
Well, that's an interesting question for sure. So I was born and brought up actually in Dubai, and my dad was working for a public relations company out there. So he was working there for, he's been almost like most of his life, he's been there for about 30 years. So myself and my sister, both of us were born and brought up there. And then I didn't know how to read or write actually my mother tongue, which is Tamil. So I did not know how to read or anything. So my dad is like, well, you got to go and learn. So he's like, okay. So my sister, my mom and I, three of us, we migrated back to India so that I could actually learn the language. So ended up, I went there at grade 6 and finished until grade 12 high school. And after that, through grade 10, I didn't want to actually finish up high school. I was like, I looked up all these things that I wanted to become a pilot, which was like, I want to go directly to flight school. And of course, the typical Indian parents, my dad wanted me to become an engineer. So, you know, I crossed a few hoops and ended up in Vancouver and started out flight training there at Boundary Bay at a flight school, and did about 15 hours. And, you know, and I really quickly noticed that I was spending a lot of time to and from Glen Valley than I actually was flying. So, and then I moved out to Kamloops, where I finished up my PPL, CPL, and also my instructor rating, worked there, and ended up in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And that is how I came.
It's just like Dubai, but a little bit further north.
Pretty much, yeah. It's just like, you know, plus 30 versus minus 30. Same difference.
They both got oil.
They do?
Yeah, so it's good. It's same difference.
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, well, so interesting. So you knew like right from high school you were gonna fly, and that's
actually I knew I was gonna fly since I was 3 years old, because I've always said I wanted to become a pilot, and all my family thought I was crazy, because none of my family has any relevance to aviation, but my dad was happy that I was actually into flying. So whenever we traveled back to India to visit family and friends, he would actually asked me to go and check out the cockpit, and that actually became a habit of mine. So every new airplane I visit, I actually go and check out the cockpit. So when I was about 6 years old, he got me a Discovery flight on an ultralight airplane in Dubai. That is where it kind of started.
What's Vignesh's ultimate flying picture look like?
Well, it has actually changed quite a bit, to be very honest, because when I came here, I was like, you know, it's this big boy's dream was to fly for Emirates. You know, you see those captains and the stewardesses just walking together. They're like, I want to be there. But once I came to Canada, which, again, going back to general aviation, I've never seen a community like this before. And a lot of people in North America don't realize, in other parts of the world, general aviation does not even exist. So I had the opportunity to interact with a lot of private pilots and, you know, flight instructors, experienced pilots. They ended up inviting me for flying club meetings and all these things. So talking all these things, and of course, I met a few interesting personalities during my flight training. So which kind of...
There's no personalities in aviation.
That's true. But also, I should say about the mindset, you know, like one person is like, hey, absolute safety. The other person is like, okay, totally about bush flying. So those are like different aspects of flying, which I hadn't experienced at that point, because I was like totally just flight school there. So I was like, I want to go and try, you know, flight instructing. And that's kind of where it started.
So, and before we started recording, you said something interesting about you got your instrument rating up in Fort McMurray with your current employer. So you were working there already doing other flying with them. And then you said, hey, I want to get onto the IFR side. So unlike most people, you earned your instrument rating kind of not in a busy terminal environment. Like, you earned your instrument rating in a place where most city slicker IFR pilots, like, really don't understand how to operate. So what was that like doing your instrument rating in Fort McMurray, which is towered, but a remote tower?
It is. It sure is. It's totally the oil sands traffic back in the day. Now we don't have as much as traffic, but basically outside of the 5 mile control zone, we head out in different directions, 100 miles. We can't even find any controlled airspace. So yeah, so I came here to Fort McMurray as a flight instructor. I joined here as a class 4, ended up working my way up to class 1, and I wanted to actually see what the bush flying was like as well. So I was partly flying the 206 and ended up flying the Caravan on wheels. So in Canada, to fly passengers in a single engine airplane at night or IFR, you need an instrument rating and you have to go to SIM and do all those training. So when I wanted to do my instrument rating right after my private, because my multi rating I did right after my private. So I wanted to get my IFR, and my flat instructor pulled me aside. He's like, what is your goal? I'm like, I want to be a flat instructor. Okay, you're not going to use your IFR right now. Maybe, you know, learn some basics and maybe give it a try then, so that you will actually save time and money. So after I came back to Fort Mac, fast forwarding like 2.5 years, I was like, hey, I want to do the single pilot IFR stuff just so that I could learn. So obviously my chief pilot and our ops manager, my boss, both of them were happy about that. And they coached me on the side, because that is one thing I wanted to learn. That is like, I really wanted to learn from the people who have done it in the real world, right? You know, rather not just passing a flight test. So my instrument rating flight test was actually a PPC. And when we sent in the application to transport, and I don't know if this licensing clerk hasn't seen it in a while. So they were like, where is your group one flight test report? I'm like, I sent it the flight test report. It's a PPC. But they're like, you need a group one. I'm like, this car says this. So finally they issued my instrument rating.
What airplane did you do your group one in then?
Well, I actually started my group three. So I did it in the Caravan here. So I started off in a group three, because we don't have a group one machine here. But we have purchased a 1900, and we're in talks, and you know, might be going out to flight safety or do something like that in the future.
Sweet. Yeah, 1900 is a great airplane. C or a D?
It is a C.
Nice. Cool. Awesome. Okay, well, I got to ask you, like, you know, we always kind of like end up transitioning to something serious, and we're going to get into serious, which is the story that you're going to tell us. But I have to ask, I mean, Fort McMurray is northern Alberta, kind of, you know, blue collar, oil town, oil sands. And here comes Vignesh operating for the local charter company that does the bush flying and out into the oil sands and remote spots. Have you ever, like, had any experiences that, I mean, they were probably inappropriate with passengers or clients that, you know, look at you and talk to you and they're like, what are you doing up here? Like, and again, I just want to reiterate, it should not be like that, but I can only imagine, having lived in those parts before, that you must have had some interesting experiences. Because the reason why I asked this, and there's a it's not to be funny, is I talked to another listener last night who wants to come on and share a story that happened to him while he was training. And he's a Indian guy as well, out in Ontario. And he mixed up a radio transmission, and he felt like, because of his background, he was treated poorly by his peers, by instructors, that he was kind of ridiculed for it. And I said, whatever you did, like, he told me what he did. I said, it was the right thing. And that's bullshit that someone would treat you like that. So that's why I'm asking you this, as somebody who is a proven professional, who, has walked that road, to somebody like this other gentleman that I talked to yesterday. Like, what would you say to him about that?
Well, it is true that, you know, a lot of people have asked me, actually, even tonight when I was, meeting a few people for dinner, they were like, hey, how did you end up here? So it kind of, that question comes quite often. But also they're like, do you want to fly commercial? As you always get asked, you know, you get asked.
Are you flying the Caravan for money so that you can build time so you can become a real pilot one day?
Actually, not. It's the other way around, because I have my students actually flying for Encore and Jazz and a few other airlines in Canada, and whom I regularly keep in touch with. So, you know, from what you mentioned, I would say that, you know, the rules are the same for everyone. And, you know, NAV Canada, for example, if it is communications related, we are all treated the same. And I haven't really myself, as far as like on the radio wise, I haven't been treated differently. But talking the aviation industry wise,
in industry, do you feel like you've had to walk maybe up a steeper hill?
I would say so. It's just, let me put it this way. I might not get good reviews for it, but here's the thing though. Like, you know, people coming from different countries, usually getting a permanent residency, especially if you came here as an international student, people want to get their PR and then leave, right? So a lot of operators or a lot of flight schools, employers have kept on seeing that, they're like, oh, they're like, you're going to leave anyways. That's kind of been the mentality. Even when I started here, they were like, oh, our flight instructors always want to fly the caravan and then leave. I'm like, it just happened to be that I didn't end up on the caravan just because I wanted to fly charters. It was just that I have a passion for instruction, just went that way. So the answer to your question, straightforward, is yes, there are people, you know, who get treated differently, but you have to overcome that, and there are a lot more things.
As someone who has, overcome it and has been successful, are there like maybe one or two tips that you might give somebody that is kind of coming up in the industry behind you that may face similar challenges, right or wrong?
Well, probably the biggest thing I would say is, you know, take criticism, like constructive criticism is good. Sometimes I've had criticisms and I've just looked at it and I'm like, why is this happening? And I go and I end up and, you know, where can I improve myself? For example, right now, I am an Industry Canada radio examiner, for example, that I give people radio licenses for that matter. You know, it's just you grow yourself along the way and people start respecting you and they come to you for answers in the future. So, you know, improve yourself, like, you know, what Cardinal does. Hey, improve flight safety, improve yourself. I think things will happen automatically.
You sent me like a quick summary about this situation. You actually sent three. You're like, hey, which one do you want? And it's funny because I think if you've been doing this long enough, there is a menu of situations we can choose from. And it will happen. And that's experience. That's building the bucket of experience before the bucket of luck runs out. And luckily, I've probably come close a couple times to those buckets being the wrong one being empty, but we got by and we learn from it and we share so that other people can add our experience to their bucket to keep it topped up. So that's why we do this. And I want you to tell your story in detail, maybe even just like the chain of events that led up to it so we can understand, you know, the decision-making that leads up to this, the situation, what happened, then how you dealt with it, and then maybe a few things that you might have done differently or maybe learned or what's changed your flying since so that we can kind of all learn from this. And you're the first person that's come on and done this officially. And I just want to point out that we're acting on the letter that we read last episode from Ryan that said, hey, we should do these. And so this is kind of trial one.
Well, thanks, Ryan. And also, again, thanks to Ryan Mitchell as well. It's a great idea. So this event, what happened to myself? So start giving a little bit of background. I just had got my instructor rating and we had to ferry the airplane down to one of the airports in the lower mainland for some avionics work. So we went there, the work was done the next day, and basically 3 days in a row, all we got was low ceilings, coastal weather, typical fall weather, we couldn't get out. So we're like holding back, and there's one day there's like totally like, you know, squall lines and stuff. And we are like, hey, you know, we gotta hold back one more day, hopefully. And if, I don't know if a lot of people remember, that was the day actually the crash between Lethbridge and Kamloops happened. At Cherokee, that was like the very same day. And the next day we were leaving and still like fairly like about 2,000 to 3,000 foot ceilings, which is not bad, but going into the mountains, I had to basically go from the lower mainland back to Kamloops because the flight school I was working for was basically small and they had only one airplane operational at the time. The other airplane was in maintenance.
I said I wouldn't interrupt, but I have to give context because a lot of people that listen to this are not in BC. So Vancouver's on the coast. It's kind of sandwiched between the US border, the ocean, and mountains. And then on the other side of the first or second mountain range is Kamloops. So you're talking, there's kind of a couple of valleys that go through, but it's not a direct route by any means. It's very much the long way. And then you can go over top of the mountains, and the mountains are probably in the 7,000 to 8,000 foot range in the high parts there, but it is very remote area. There's not a lot in between them. So I just want to fill in that detail because the context is important for people that are not from this area.
Sure. It is. It was actually a 172. It was the flight school I was working with. So yeah. So my student and I, if you want to call it a student, it was a good friend. He was also doing his PPL. I think he just had passed his PPL, I believe. So he's like, hey, I would like this experience too. So we started from the coast, and then we were going towards Hope, BC, where the coastal mountains kind of start. And we're like, okay, you know, it's always like the pilots say, we'll go around there and look in the corner. If we can make it, we'll go further. If not, turn around. So we're like, okay, maybe we should be able to make it. So we reach Hope, and then comes the decision whether to follow the Coquihalla Highway or the Grand or the Canyon, or Highway 1, if people want to. So we were like, okay, the Highway 1 looked better, lower terrain and longer route, but we're like, okay, let's take that. So we ended up taking that, and it was an overcast layer. And of course, you know, me being happy that I had just got my commercial and just my instructor rating, oh, I can do this over the top. I see this, you know, big toilet bowl above me that I could probably shuttle climb in this valley and I could get above and get away, rather than, you know, doing the longer way because I don't know what is up to come. So long story short, we ended up, you know, doing a shuttle climb, get above the clouds, and in the meantime, I'm also calling Pacific Radio, making sure that the weather is kind of clear in Kamloops. They're like, hey, yep, it's sky clear, 40 miles visibility, perfect. But the intermediate, like, they didn't have any pyrops or anything. So from what I saw, it was about 7,000 feet overcast ASL. So I ended up climbing for 8,500, and I knew the terrain at that point, and I've done that trip a few times. So I ended up starting going across, and midway through the flight, and all of a sudden we just see a circuit breaker pop. We're like, oh, this is weird. Okay, it just came back from an avionics shop. Everything should be good. We reset it once as per the checklist. And all of a sudden we see a couple other circuit breakers pop. We're like, oh, this is not looking good. And just below the transponder, like where the encoder cables go, all of a sudden we see a spark and start, you know, seeing smoke at that point. So we're like, oh, it's almost an electrical fire. And, you know, memory items, shut off the master and all the stuff. We are securing the fire extinguisher, making sure that if we had to use it. And that's when I'm like, okay, if I have to go down or like if I have to land, where do I land? At this point, I'm over the top. Could not see any peaks because the clouds were over top of all the mountains, maybe one or two, and I have no clue how to get down. So we ended up making sure that, you know, like we saw sparks and stuff, but we're like, okay, you shut off the master, nothing should happen. The other person even like pushed his seat all the way back, went underneath the panel, looked at making sure that there was nothing burning, and we still followed the emergency procedures. And, you know, following the flight through and ended up landing in Kamloops safely. But where I was expecting weather in Kamloops to be super clear, basically that was just that day was my luck. Right above the airport, it was open, but everywhere else it was still that overcast layer.
So did you turn the master back on and get your radios back to go into Kamloops, or were you like full Nordo coming in?
I actually had to fly Nordo because I had a headset, Bluetooth headset at that point. So I called up, it's usually like one of the first things my instructor taught me was have the local tower on your speed dial. So I had that and I called them. They're like, yep, hey, absolutely come in. There's nothing going on. And we ended up going and landing, and I didn't even pull into auto ramp. I just went direct to maintenance and just parked the airplane there.
And what did your student/the new private pilot that you were flying with have to say about all this?
Oh, Him and I, we've flown before during my CPL building time. We had flown all across BC. So he had confidence in me, but he was concerned. We're like, okay, if we have to go down, like, where are we going down? Basically, we don't know. We can't follow any valleys because we're in the middle of the mountains. And the closest I could get is possibly 25 miles away. And even then, I don't know if I could get down to the valley or not. So kept going direct Kamloops, and that's where we ended up.
Cool. And so coming out of that, I mean, you made a decision to go on top, which is, I mean, is not a necessarily a bad decision. I mean, using the information you had, using your experience, you're legally allowed to do it. I mean, I've done it. Did that change your decision-making about flying on top at all?
It sure did, actually, because I had just gotten my instructor rating. I started thinking, I'm like, okay, what if this happens to a student? Or what if this actually happens to myself again? How are we going to get down? So VFR over the top was, you know, that's when we were like, hey, you know, we have to limit the routes, which areas we really know well, which valleys we really know well. And even we started doing things like, even if we're following VFR over the top, we ended up following the valley. Just the worst case that, you know, we could descend down and we know that we could actually get down to the valley, not over top of a hill. And
what tools are you using to follow the valley on top?
So I've been flying with different students, different airplanes. R172 had a basic VFR GPS, so that did have the valleys kind of marked out. But also, 4Flight came out, and a few of my students actually had the Stratus version, so we had synthetic vision available on 4Flight. And especially during night VFR, even though they call it VFR, we utilized those as well, especially in the mountains.
Do you ever, when you're working with students, have you ever put somebody under the hood and had them actually try and fly with the 4Flight synthetic vision?
I actually have, yes.
How did that go?
Well, because they have the AHRS data, they're doing pretty well. It's just basically like this individual, they actually had, it was on a G1000 airplane. So basically I just taped with a big white screen, and it was easy for them because that's all they've been used to. So it worked out okay.
I think something that's really important to bring up about 4Flight synthetic vision, and it is a great tool. I think my favorite tool in 4Flight, and if you're from 4Flight and you're listening to this, I've put in like 4 requests for a feature edition, is, and it doesn't come with the basic subscription, unfortunately, is Hazard Advisor. Hazard Advisor is amazing because while you're flying, it changes the color of the terrain that's below, like whether it's, you know, 1,000 feet below you or the same altitude or above you. It's really nice. One at night. I mean, I don't fly in big terrain VFR at night, just as a personal rule. But even if you're on a day VFR across country and you're going to go across the mountains, you can keep climbing and you can see routes start opening up as the colors change. And you can see, okay, well, now I've got a basically a clear shot in that direction because all the terrain below me is yellow or is not colored. But what I've asked them to do as a feature request is that terrain or hazard advisor, they call it, is only available while the airplane's moving in flight. You can't use it as a pre-flight planning tool. So what I've asked them to do is have a pre-flight hazard advisor mode where, you know how there's the slider where you can check the upper winds and the turbulence based on altitude, is to have a hazard advisor mode where on the ground you can use that slider and you can watch terrain change colors based on altitude, so that while you're planning a route through the mountains, you can say, I wonder what opens up if I'm at 5,000 feet, what opens up if I'm at 7,000 feet, so that we can kind of plan routes better that way. So if you're from 4Flight and you hear that, please, please, please do it. But what I wanted to say about the 4Flight synthetic vision is it's great. It shows you ground speed. It shows you, you know, terrain. If you have the AHRS with the Stratus or the Sentry, whatever it is, the attitude. One thing to keep in mind, though, is the altitude is GPS altitude.
That's correct. Yeah.
It is not barometric altitude. So one thing I kind of tell everybody that says, well, but I've got 4Flight and I've got synthetic vision and it'll get me out of trouble. Yeah, but I kind of, my rule of thumb for that four flight GPS altitude is take whatever altitude you see and add 500-foot buffer for safety. So if you think that, well, 7,500 is safe here, I want to be at 7,500, and I've defaulted to a backup of using four flight synthetic vision, fly 8,000 feet on the GPS altitude just to give yourself some buffer. Because I've seen errors anywhere from, it'll be within 50 feet to 500 or more feet because it's not corrected for your altimeter or temperature or anything like that.
Yep, that is true. That's a great point.
Cool. So what are some other things that, based on that experience or other experiences you've had, that you pass on to your students or your clients when it comes to flying over the top or dealing with an emergency like an electrical fire? Because we all were taught to read the checklist, and pretty much every airplane's the same, you know, turn everything off and then make sure the smoke goes away and then, you know, turn the master on and reset the circuit breakers one by one. It's the same in every single airplane. But based on your experience, is it like, that's what the checklist says, but Vignesh, based on his real world experience, says do this?
Well, I would say, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, shut off the alternator off. That's, I've actually seen some flight instructors say that. As soon as you get an electrical fire or anything like that, rather than shutting the master itself off, alternator off, I'm like, doesn't really make any sense. Like, you want the total electrical system off. So of course, the biggest thing I would tell people is before you reach out the checklist, turn your master off and then grab the checklist. I do preach this to my students. Like, the rule of thumb I usually tell my students for emergencies is, will you die in the next 30 seconds? If the answer is yes, you need to know it out on top of your head. If the answer is no, pull out your checklist, you know, do the necessary item and then back it up with the checklist.
And then, so that circuit breaker popped, has your feeling about resetting circuit breakers changed? Would you still, if it were to happen again today, I don't know what circuit breaker it was, maybe you do, but if it happened again today, would you reset that breaker the first time, or would you just say, screw it, we can fly without this?
It is definitely changed a lot. It's just between, like, I won't call it trauma, but it was like, it was just that I was concerned. It was like a real world experience for the first time. I was like, I didn't want to fly for a day. I was like, you know what? I didn't want to fly that airplane particularly. I was like, I really want to test it out and then maybe go. But they ended up making me do the test flight anyways to break that stigma, if you want to call it. But yes, as far as circuit breakers goes, now I'm comfortable, just that I've gained a lot of knowledge on systems. And that is something I wanted to mention, because before that, I didn't have an idea of how the electrical system or what a bus was or how the electrical diagram even worked. So I ended up going out to the POH and saying, hey, okay, this breaker does this, and this was the instrument what was doing this. So especially going into the bigger machines or training students, especially jumping into a new airplane, which I've never flown before, that is one of the biggest things I do, like read the POH cover to cover and start from there. And that, I would say that is the biggest thing, like learn the airplane a lot more than you just flying it.
Totally. And I think it's to another point too, when you pick an airplane up that's just had maintenance, especially avionics work or engine work, I think the personal minimums change a little bit. You know, if I'm going to ferry an airplane that I don't know, I can promise you that the first leg is not going to be IFR and it's not going to be at night. It's just not happening. And I mean, unless it's a turbine airplane that is meant, needs to go high in IFR, that's different. But I think there's something to be said for staying in good, predictable conditions, especially when it's come out. But that said, if you picked up the airplane in the Lower Mainland and flew to Hope, you had a good 45 minutes of testing everything out. It's not like you took off from the airport and shuttled up into, I like how you called it, the toilet bowl. I've never seen a toilet flush upwards, but it's not, yeah, you didn't take off from an airport and be like, screw it, I'm going on top. You had a good 40 minutes in the airplane before you did that.
Sure did, yeah. But what it ended up happening was, it was just, it was basically a wiring harness, which was not secured properly. and it ended up rubbing against each other and just ended up making the spark. And that came with a hefty bill in the future, but still, I'm glad that all of us were safe and we made it down safe.
Yeah, I am too. So cool, Vignesh. Well, I really appreciate you sharing that experience. Hopefully somebody somewhere has learned something from it and can draw from it when they need to make a difficult decision, or just even just the priorities of aviating, navigating, communicating, right? Like, it would be very easy on top of cloud with electrical clouds forming in your airplane to just stop aviating and just stop navigating and just go straight to communicate. Like, I need to tell somebody, right? But yeah, anyway, good for you. And thank you so much for sharing that. Is there anything else you wanted to kind of, I don't know, bits of Vignesh wisdom that you wanted to pass on? You did an awesome rust remover a couple months ago that I was very honored to be asked to share at. So I did a presentation there, and you brought together presenters from the TSB, Transport Canada, Nav Canada, and the like. So, I mean, really cool that you're doing that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you've been doing in Alberta?
Absolutely. Well, promoting GA has become one of the most common things, which I wanted to always do, especially because I think 2017, 2016 was when exactly BCGA was formed as well. And seeing this community kind of coming together, it's like, hey, how can we do it? My biggest thing has been is to create awareness with the kids or like newer aviators, because we really don't have much youth in aviation anymore, except for, you know, international students coming in and doing stuff, or their cadets. Even they're struggling to really maintain people. After I've come to Alberta, with the local flight school, which I've been working on, we've managed to work with a couple high schools here in town, and we are actually teaching aviation as a subject. So we're teaching basically PPL ground school along with some human factors, and also we're, the school has been you know, gracious enough that actually they put in desktop simulators, like we're talking about like 20 desktop simulators in a computer lab. And we've been doing that. And also recently we've signed a MOU with a local college here doing a business aviation diploma program. That's kind of, those have been my projects. And of course, Blue Jay Aviation has opened up a lot of doors for me. Knowing people in the industry, knowing a lot of private pilots whom I didn't really been in touch with before. Like a client was like, hey, I have a Piper Cherokee 180 and I really want you to just push me out of my limits. And, you know, so I really think like Blue Jay has definitely opened up a lot of doors for me, and I hope we could keep on doing that in the future.
Well, thank you for everything that you're doing to promote aviation with young people, for everything that you're doing to promote flight safety. That's why I think we work really well together, because that really is our primary motivation. If you're anything like me, you hate invoicing and you hate billing. It's more just about flying and helping. So, yeah, I appreciate your time. Thank you for doing this with me, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in the future.
Well, thanks, Ryan. Thanks again for having me, and really look forward to this.
All right, everyone. Well, that's my conversation with Vignesh, and it sounds like it's over, but it's really not, because right after we stopped recording, we kept talking, and Vignesh reminded me of something that happened a few weeks ago. So we started recording again, and it's a little bit shorter than this one, but it's really about something that happened where Vignesh made a post on social media and somebody took an issue with it and decided to report him to the authorities. And we're going to talk about what that post was and just how ridiculous really that whole thing became. And I think if you're a pilot, if you enjoy sharing your content online, if you share your opinions or your training strategies online, you're really going to find that conversation interesting. So I've cut that out. We have made that into a part two of this episode. So that's going to come out next Sunday. And I'll be out in Kamloops, BC. We're running the Survival Shakedown, which I'll tell you all about probably week after next. We're taking 20 pilots out into the bush and having them use their aircraft survival kit as if they just had a forced landing and were stuck out overnight, and they actually will be stuck out overnight with minimal equipment. So I look forward to telling you all about that in a couple weeks. And yeah, until next week, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation, email us info@cardinalaviation.ca. And if you want to check out some of the many services that we provide, from coaching, ferry flying, consulting, aircraft management, all that good stuff, we love it all, www.cardinalaviation.ca. Thanks to Vignesh, thanks to all of you, and until next time, fly safely, never stop learning, and take care of yourself.